Hello, and welcome back to the Dive and Dig podcast. My name is Lucy Blue, and this week I am recording in situ from coastal Lebanon. I will be speaking to Professor Corinne Yazbek about her amazing finds from the early fishing and farming settlement of Tabaja. I'm back in Lebanon, I'm really excited, and I've just had the most amazing time in the last couple of days with Dr. Corinne Yazbek, who is a hugely knowledgeable archaeologist of the Neolithic and earlier, but she has made this amazing discovery, which this huge site of Tabaja, which I'm probably mispronouncing. Anyway, Corinne, you are the expert and this is your amazing site. Could you just tell the listeners a little bit about the basics?
The site of Tabaja, in fact, the real name is Tabaja Wataslam. That's the name of the area within the locality of Tabaja. We discovered the site on in 2016, and we excavated for 3 years, I think. And since then, since 2019, we have been conducting post-excavation and analysis on this amazing site that dates back to the Neolithic period, or in other terms, to roughly 10,000 from now. It's 10,000 years old.
Yeah, which is amazing.
Yes.
And what's also amazing is it extended continuous occupation?
Almost, yes. From until the people who settled here, they stayed here continuously almost for 1,500 years or 600 years, something like that. And we noticed what we call different stages, different phases of occupation, during which one can observe evolution of the settlement, the type of the houses. In the beginning, the houses didn't have plastered floor, and then they started inventing plastering, you know, with chalk, with lime. And then they invented pottery, so we have these inventions maybe happening on site, who knows. We have lots of amazing findings related to funeral practices, human remains, how they buried their dead, what did they eat, like what type of animal they hunted or they domesticated. And we also think that this may have been a center for domestication during these phases of the Neolithic.
No, that's amazing. I just have to say, we are actually in the site hut here. So this is headquarters. which means that there's a road and there's now a church bell ringing and various other things, but we'll ignore them because that's fine. This is the reality of being on site. But the other thing about this location is that we are right on the coast. So obviously this is not only important because of this huge, extensive occupation period, and also incredibly early, as Corinne said, you know, from a period when they didn't even have pottery through to a period when they did use pottery, but also the maritime location is really important. Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, the finds that you have that give that reference to the sea?
First, before giving more details on everything related to maritime life, let's say, I'd like to point out that this is the earliest settlement on the Lebanese coast as villages.
Oh, wow.
This is earlier than Byblos.
Yeah.
This is at least 1,000, maybe more.
Yes.
A thousand years earlier.
It must be.
Byblos. Yeah. And these people, the villagers, the Tabarjian, if we want to call them, the early Tabarjian, they used marine resources, yes, like they used to fish, deep sea fishing even. We have beautiful fish bones of different types, different species, indicative of deep sea fishing. Yeah. So they must have had some type of boats or how do you say, watercrafts,
yes.
Some type of watercraft. Maybe they navigated further, who knows, maybe they navigated towards Cyprus. So we have this aspect. We have some of the earliest stone anchors, stone weight. We have a nice collection being studied currently.
You mean like weights for nets?
Weight for nets, yes, yeah. Yes. Fishing. Fishing weights.
Yes,
no?
Yes.
We have bonefish hooks. We have a nice collection, a nice assemblage recovered from the site, of course. In situ, from well-defined contexts, we have more than maybe 55 bonefish hooks. They used to fish with these.
You're working on a massive scale here, and the reason for that is because, thankfully, you had sympathetic developers who gave you the permission to do this work. So you've been working under a lot of stress in the first 4 years.
Yes.
And continue. So do you plan to do some more work as part of that development, or you just, I've been looking at the finds today, and you've got, it's just incredible, but there's a massive amount of processing and analysis to do. So what's, you're going to be here until your retirement and beyond?
Oh, who knows, maybe. No, I, well, yes, maybe. Well, first, you know, we were lucky to collaborate with a nice developer, if we can say. This is rare, you know, in Lebanon and abroad, I think,
worldwide.
Developer, you know, they want their interest. Mm. But here we can say that we had a good collaboration between archaeological team and the owners of the land, so the developers. And they financed the excavation at the time, because this is a rescue excavation.
You've already excavated
35,000. I think we already excavated roughly more 35,000 meters,
yeah,
I think.
Give or take.
Yes. That's why it will take a lot of time. Yeah. To process the data we collected through the years. We had a very short period to collect all the data, so it was very quick. We built a very large team, but this surface is normally has to be excavated in years, in 30 years.
Exactly.
But we had to do this in 3 years' time. This was crazy. When I think about it, you know, I can tell you that before, when we had houses, plastered floor houses, dating back to 7,000 years BC before Christ, and we had to dismantle to deliver the sector to the developer. You know, I used to count how many houses do we still have to dismantle or to dig, you know, and counting this house, you know.
I can't imagine you did much sleeping, actually, because it must have been so...
Very stressful at certain points, and sometimes we had to make some sacrifice.
But you also mentioned, did you mention this evidence for domestication?
Yes, and we may have some of the earliest... centers for the on the coast, yes, 11, yeah. Not inland, because inland there are older.
Yeah.
We're conducting some studies now on pig domestication with my colleague Joanna Shahoud, who's archaeozoologist, specializing in early domestication. So we think that we may have a center for domestication of pig goat here in Tabarja.
Yeah.
Maybe some other species, but mainly pig goat. So we also have some of the earliest evidence of agriculture. We have beautiful botanical remains. We don't have a large collection, but we have. They are well preserved. They are. Charred remains, burnt.
That's why they
were preserved.
Yeah.
Some were found in what we call roasting pits. It means that these people ate fava bean, like the fool we eat today.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
That's the
ancestor.
My favorite.
Yeah.
Yes. And other grains like barley, like wheat, like lentils, like. These are the species I remember. So these were dated to, they are 10,000 years old. And at least in two places on the site, these were discovered in what we call roasting pits. Means they put a lot of these grains and they roasted them and they ate them. Well, they did not eat them because we
found not those particular
not those,
ones.
Yes, so. Not those in particular. We found those.
Yeah. It's incredible, really, to think it's 10,000 years ago. We've got so much interconnectivity, so much, you know, sophistication in a way. But I mean, I remember when I started studying archaeology, even the Bronze Age, the Late Bronze Age, was considered, you know, something in the
very remote.
Yes, exactly. Whereas now we have
savages.
This sense of, yeah, exactly. Yes, but now we have this sense of, you know, the it's so cosmopolitan, it's so connected. You talk about these beautiful, you know, lined plaster line or the lined plaster floors in the houses, the very detailed figurines, the lithics that I've seen are just outstanding. And
I can tell you more about these people. You know, these people were clean. You know that during, at least during one stage of the village, during the phase where they built plastered floor, they had what we call refuse pits. It means that's a pit, they dig a pit and they throw their garbage. Mm-hmm. At a certain point, we were noticing that we don't have dumps of animal bones or, you know, rubbish or garbage. Mm-hmm. Where do they throw them? This village seems clean, you know, so they have some kind of waste management.
No.
at the time, imagine, better than now.
I'm glad you said it, Norma.
Yes, I said it. Yeah.
But also, so, I mean, the other thing that I've discovered this morning in particular, when you were showing this amazing... The burials have come up with some quite interesting results.
So they have this practice of removing the skull, of placing the skull elsewhere, or mm-hmm. with a series of skulls, mm-hmm. or beneath the floor, or exhibited. This can be found also in Jericho. I think Kathleen Kenyon was the first to find these skulls exhibited. We have also a strange disposition of the skeletal remains, you know, commingling of bones or collective burials. Mm. These indicate, yes, when studied thoroughly, they will indicate also funerary practices linked to maybe some identities, you know. Mm. Since we have more than 200 or 300, you know,
300
skeleton human deposits.
So what do you think it's telling you? I mean, you've spoken about the maritime, but this connectivity, this is definitely not my area of expertise, the Neolithic. I've learned quite a bit in the last few days, but in terms of, you know, where are these people coming from? I mean, maybe you don't know the definitive answer to that, but what are the... We've seen some absolutely beautiful figurines, for example.
Yes.
And I know the analysis obviously will help with determining origin, but do you have any sense of, you know, where they're coming from and maybe which way they're going? Because I'm always interested in that connection across water as well.
That's a great question, you know. And the location of Tabarja, you know, on the coast... in Lebanon, in what we call the central Levant, it makes it, it places it on a crossroad of cultures from the southern Levant, from the northern Levant. I think we have cultural traits coming from the northern Levant and the southern Levant. We are finding also some similarities, some parallels with the sites in Cyprus, like Shilurokombos, details of some figurative art or figurine, you know, and maybe some the type of the dwellings, you know, architectural remains, and the dates also. We are contemporary a little bit with Shilurokombos in Cyprus. So I think these people were connected to a network of other installation, other villages like them, maybe larger, maybe smaller, all along the coast, to the south, to the north, and I'd like to think, Lucy, that they navigated to Cyprus, but maybe Cypriot came to and then they,
which direction,
you know, they probably have connection, we have connection with Cyprus, we like to believe that, I think, yes, this is possible.
And you also mentioned this beautiful bay that I've actually...
La Barja. Saint-Paul.
Yes, had an opportunity to swim in before. But I remember Anna herself, this is Anna Frost, obviously, actually found some anchors.
She has found.
Yeah. Although I think, if I remember rightly, they're quite a bit bigger than...
Bigger.
Yeah, so maybe they date from...
Maybe later. Maybe period. Later, yeah. I think there was two.
Yes, I think you're
two,
right.
Two, if I'm right, yeah. And one is located, but the other one...
No, I think it may have been removed. But I mean, the HFF Lebanon team have been doing some survey work under your direction,
yes,
and the
yeah.
permission of the DGA, so hopefully maybe they'll find some other things related, perhaps more directly to the Neolithic. I think we're running out of time, but I'm sure, just as a... In your own thoughts, what for you is the, I don't know, the most exciting things you've found, but the most exciting, important, I don't know, gratifying aspect of working at Tabarja? Slightly mispronounced.
You mean now, during the excavation?
Or at any point,
You know, during everything, you know, this was a huge responsibility, very stressful. But when you're in it, you only feel the responsibility. You feel the beauty of it when people talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
When yourself, Lucy yeah. Blue, you come and say, you know, you tell me that this is an extraordinary sight, you know, I forget my stress, I forget what I mm-hmm. lived, you know, the houses I used to count before I go to sleep. And now I feel, no, I'm happy now to have been able to build a good team working within the framework of this HFF funded project, a nice team, very serious, very skilled,
yeah.
And I feel satisfied, you know, and I do have good hope that we are going to have excellent results
yeah.
on some aspects, some important aspects of the life in Tabarja 10,000 years and 9,000 years ago.
Thanks so much, Corinne. Such an amazing sight, telling us so much more about the Neolithic, with many more secrets to reveal, I'm sure. And just a quick update, the HFF Lebanon team recently found more stone anchors in the bay, so watch this space. Thanks to Corinne and to you for listening to this Dive and Dig podcast, brought to you by the Honor Frost Foundation, a charity that supports the development and research into maritime archaeology in the Eastern Mediterranean.